got video this time.
We do have video. It's mine.
I can't drink that.
Because you're weak.
Welcome to the Grappling With Podcast. Dr. Chris Hardy and William Walker will take a deep dive into topics covering wellness and prevention, performance, recovery, and injury management. Our mission is to provide the latest science-based information to help you get the most out of your grappling journey, both on and off the mats, and help you overcome any challenges you may be grappling with. Dr. Hardy is a licensed physician and BJJ practitioner, but the contents of the podcast are meant for educational purposes only and should not be taken as medical advice. Please seek out personalized care from your own medical provider prior to implementing any medical treatment or intervention.
Hello.
Hello.
How's everyone doing?
Hi.
So we have a guest today. I switched spots with Bill. I feel super weird, and I think my IQ's dropped 20 points sitting over here.
Son of a bitch. I'll kill you.
It's actually a pretty good view of my face from this end.
It is the better side.
It is definitely the better side. We have my friend and colleague, Dr. Jonathan Kang, here. We have him on for a couple reasons.
Mm.
And before we start, I'm going to mess with him a little bit because he had this big outline about how he wanted to cover this thing and going through point. Well, hey, then we're going to talk about this. I'm like, no. Which I appreciate the effort, man. It's like the most prepared any of our guests have been.
Some doctors are more prepared than others.
Yeah, that's for damn sure. I work 10 feet away from him, so I see him in action. He's definitely top-notch in that respect.
He's the foot effing master.
We're going to talk about that. He's got his technique down and everything. Don't tickle or nothing.
Right? You don't tickle feet?
Good.
You're pretty good with
only
the
at home.
Okay.
Respect. Oh, wow. So, but anyway, we're going to kind of get into not only, you know, Jonathan's background a little bit, but I think most importantly, this is recently, in the last couple, 1 year in jiu-jitsu, right?
1 year.
Yeah. So it's the anniversary. Isn't it this month?
Yes.
Yeah.
A lot. I don't think we really ever hear on podcasts, especially jiu-jitsu podcasts, white belts coming on and talking about where they're at and what their perceptions are. We always have to recall from being a purple belt or something like that.
Yeah, so I have a lot of questions to actually ask you. It's actually pretty interesting. Not to put you on the spot or anything.
He came here thinking he's going to talk about physician stuff.
Yeah. Well, Jonathan, he'll talk more about it, but he's a foot and ankle specialist, a doctor of podiatric medicine. They do surgical and non-surgical care of the foot and ankle. So definitely there's a lot of things that are applicable to jiu-jitsu as well with feet and ankles for sure. And we'll talk about some of those at the end, but give us a little bit of your background first.
Background.
Yeah. Make sure you talk up right up here.
Where were you born?
Oh man, my mom and dad, they met back.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. No. So, I mean, Seattle, born and raised, school, Pennsylvania, for undergrad at Lehigh University, went to Rosalind Franklin Scholl Podiatric Scholl College of Podiatric Medicine in Chicago, trained in Wisconsin for 3 years at the Madison VA, then have been with Everett Clinic for the past 5 years. Nice. I have the privilege of working with Dr. Christopher Hardy.
Right. That's one way to say it.
that's a very diplomatic way to say it.
He will not hurt you. I won't let it happen. Not today.
And you know, it's really been a pleasure having someone like him to work with. And I knew he had some interest in jiu-jitsu, but we kind of coaxed him into our little cult here.
What'd that look like? That intro of trying to get him to come in. What were you interested? You found out he does it, and you're like, oh, I kind of heard about that. Or were you just like, you're looking a little flimsy? You might need to do something about it. Yeah.
No, it was. I've always had a little bit of an interest in grappling. I did a little bit of wrestling in high school, middle school.
You dog. I did not know that.
Just 2 years. Oh, so middle school, it was eighth grade. I was in the 94-pound weight class. Then in high school, it was just freshman year at 103, right? Then I realized it takes a lot of energy. My stress cup was a little full.
Oh, a reference.
Yeah.
He referenced our previous podcast.
Wow.
Dude, gold star.
Go ahead.
Please keep going.
After quite a bit of perseverating, I don't know if I'm using that right.
Dude, I love this. Keep going.
I'm a fan of the podcast, guys. Yeah. I'm a fan. I listen weekly.
Look at the big brain on Brad.
Keep going.
Yeah, sorry.
I'm feeling good about
Remember the whole distraction thing and staying on topic? Yeah, just throw it out the window. So keep going.
So basically, what was your experience of being coaxed into this thing?
Yeah, I mean, it was a lot more like intimidating in my mind than I thought it was going to be. Entering into, you know, the dojo, entering into like just all of it. There was the, am I going to get injured portion of it? There was the, is someone like, am I just going to totally embarrass myself? But the gym was super welcoming, right? And I wanted to do this for myself, right? Because I stopped wrestling for college, for career. But then now that I have a little bit of space, I'm like, okay, well, maybe I can do something for myself. And
did I badger you too much at work?
It was a welcomed badgering.
Okay.
Yeah.
That wasn't too welcome.
Very much appreciated.
Okay.
Yeah. So were you just at, as most of us jiu-jitsu addicts do, just in any moment, would you bring it up?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Yes. I feel like it's switched now, a year in. Like, I'm like, hey, sorry to bother you. I don't have a work question.
We worked literally 10 feet from each other. So he'll come over. You know, I'm always asking him, you know, some foot and ankle stuff for some of my patients. And then, but then he'll come over and goes, hey, you know, what about this guard?
this one guy, he just keeps passing my guard.
And what I really like is I'll look over my desk and I can see his, and his back is to me, and he has two screens. Mm. He has his patients up here doing his thing, and then he has jiu-jitsu videos on YouTube.
I'm trying to like find ways to like sneak it in,
right,
and find something tricky, mm-hmm, but I can't hide it.
So it's difficult.
Yeah.
No, he always asks good questions. We talk about it all the time at work. Mm-hmm. So it's very cool having a colleague that trains too. So yeah. Well, tell us about, you know, how you were feeling like that first month and kind of your progression over the last year, you know, challenges, things that you kind of came across, maybe you didn't expect.
Yeah. I mean, that first month, I had no idea what I didn't know. I still don't know what I don't know. I went to a swim lesson with my daughter on Friday, mm-hmm, and the teacher was like, "Oh, so to do the backstroke, you have to, you know, put your hand up." And when she was actually trying, I was like, "Dude, it's not that hard. Like, put your hand up above your head." Mm-hmm. But then I realized, wait a second. That's probably how you guys feel when you're trying to coach me. Because I remember I asked pretty recently, Bill and Olivia, hey, so I want to be like better at like basics. Can you show me how to do a better shrimp? And I did the shrimp and Bill was super nice, but he was like, well, that's one way to do it.
That's more like a crawdad. I don't know if that's right. A shrimp.
So I mean, I don't know what, like how much more there is. And it can be really kind of confusing. It can be, I can get really lost, kind of discouraged at times, mm-hmm, but because there's so much to learn, it can be very exciting too.
Yeah.
Right.
And that doesn't change, by the way.
At all?
No, matter of fact, I think it's worse for me. Even the more you get into it, the more you realize, oh, wow, it's endless, right? Mm. There's always a new direction to go. There's always improvement. Then you start understanding what you don't know. When you're a white belt, you don't know what you don't know, right?
Right.
Then you start realizing what you don't know, at brown belt especially. I've got a lot of anxiety around that. And then this is a lifelong art. Mm-hmm. So that's the excitement. That's what keeps us being addictive and just, you know, such a lifelong pursuit in my mind. But what was your experience like, you know rolling the first time, as that first month especially?
It was like I was a piece of gum, right?
Did Did you roll in your first class?
Yeah, or tried to.
I'm sure.
Right. With like the little that I knew from decade ago or a decade ago. And like when you step on gum, you don't just step on it. You kind of like smoosh it. And that's how I felt rolling with like other people. Cause like I didn't know what to do. I just, you know, people would just smash me. Mm-hmm. Right. And was it a little discouraging? Sure. But at the same time, I was like, well, there's so much more to learn.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
My thing was, you know, I don't know how you felt, but when I first came in with an athletic background and all that, you have some ideas what your what your capabilities are. Realized very quickly what they weren't.
Right.
Right. And it's really exposes kind of that, you know, and you're like, oh man, I just got handled and I couldn't do anything about it type of thing. Right. It's very humbling.
Yes.
You feel that way
very
too?
Very much so. Yeah.
It can almost feel unnerving. Like where it's, I mean, some people, maybe they have that competitive thing in them and it's tapped already. So it's just like fight or flight. And it's like, okay, I'm in a fight. But then it can also, if maybe you don't have that on hand, it can feel just kind of scary. Like you're getting squished.
Right.
Like this is kind of like a, just unnerving kind of feeling.
On that end of the spectrum, I feel like I was a little bit more on the unnerving portion because I was like, oh man, like, I could use strength, but I still don't feel like I would be able to do anything, right? Like, I didn't, like, turn it on, be competitive, spastic, for lack of words. And I just, like, the techniques, the center of gravity, the, like, there was so much basics that I didn't have, right?
Well, one thing I will notice, as far as white belts go, you definitely are not, on the spazzy spectrum, you're very low on that.
Okay.
He's on the other side, which was
you're a little maybe too passive.
His at worry first. Was being too spazzy or using too much or offending a training partner or something like that.
Right.
Yeah. Being a jerk of a training partner, as some would call it.
Yeah, because I mean, I feel like I'm trying to be in it for the long term, right? Injury prevention, and also to like be like good friends with everybody at the gym too, right?
Yeah, of course. That's what it's all about. Yeah. I mean, that's the best part of our academy, you know. Shoot, just great people just to hang around and, you know.
One thing I still can't really grasp, and I struggle with this a little bit still, is like if I go really hard and not that I can, but like submit or like get someone, like smash someone really hard, like that makes them better. I feel like I'm being a jerk.
Like you know? Feel like there's no way he's going to feel better after this.
Right.
Or get like, something out this, of it.
Like this, you're ruining this, someone's day.
Right. This older white belt is like kind of putting the smash on. And I don't know. I don't want to like hurt anyone's ego or pride. Right.
That's interesting because they need their ego hurt.
Yeah, that's a lot of the whole point. Not really hurting, but really kind of wiping that away a little bit and getting some humility and understanding that, you know, that's part of the art. Part of growth in the art is learning how to deal with those situations like that, right? Where you aren't the alpha and you aren't on top and you're, you know?
Right.
And a big part is in those situations, because the people that you're probably having that success with are going to be other white belts, right? And that's the best self-defense scenario there is when because you were very passive in the beginning, you've been able to start getting a hold of that a little bit. But when you go against other white belts, they're going to be having the same struggle. So by you kind of upping it against these similar skill level people, that's mimicking like a self-defense situation where they start to do kind of uncontrolled movements and their ego is coming into play, which is normal for all of us. I had that in situationals with Chris last time we went. He was smushing the poop out of me. I wanted to go potty right there on the mats because he was putting so much pressure in and a little bit of competitiveness, ego. They're like cousins, right? Started coming out and then I really had to exert myself to even get a frame back in, not even get out of a position, just to get a frame in.
He's not telling you I did that because he he submitted me with some kind of bullshit that I was really upset about. Not upset, but we...
Ego.
Yeah. But it's not to the point where it's ruining our training. There's mm-hmm. nothing wrong with a little, you know, shit talk and a little healthy competition there. And that, okay. that helps sharp iron sharpens iron type mm-hmm. of thing. Mm-hmm. As long as it doesn't get into a point and I'm like, damn, Bill's such a jerk. Yeah. I hate that guy. You know what I mean?
It definitely will end up pushing you both for the better.
Yeah.
Because just in that scenario, I catch him with something goofy or whatever it is. But now he's like, I'm going to up my game next time I go with Bill, and I'm going to really challenge himself to not allow a bad position to really, you know, do something correctly or whatever it is, sharpen something. So you're going to have that same thing to that person. And that's how you're making them better.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, when he catches me in something, I call it bullshit. It's very skillful what he does usually, but,
it was a wrist lock.
No, part of me though is also like, that was super slick. I like that. You know, watching my training partners like develop something new too is cool.
Yeah.
Right. And then I'm like, oh, I got to figure that one out. You know what I mean? So,
yeah, it's really now we're coming from a different perspective, being upper belts for sure. But when you started getting that trigger control of putting in effort, exerting yourself, using pressure. Like, it was exciting when I felt it for the first time because we hadn't rolled for maybe like a month or two, and it was noticeable.
And I'd compliment him on that, and he doesn't like hearing any of that stuff.
Well, it's hard to gauge too. Like, really? Like,
like we're blowing smoke or something, right? When you know, watching his progression. By the way, you know, as a year out, he's a 3-stripe white belt now, which is a great progression, and it's very well deserved. I know he thinks he's going to avoid blue belt. He's going to, and you know, I'm going to call you out. He's going to try to pull the Haggerty and like, you know, take some stripes off his belt.
Good call.
I washed it too much.
Yeah.
Was I a 3-stripe? I thought I only two. But my point is the progression over this year has been phenomenal, and watching it, you know, really being a student of the art too, which is super cool. Like, watching outside videos, trying to incorporate that, very training intentionally. And like Bill said, when, you know, every time I'm rolling with you, I feel something new. It's an improvement. And then I'm like, okay. And I turn it up to match it a little bit. And it's super, super fun that way.
Yeah.
Cause I'm getting something out of it too. Right. So I'm like, oh, okay. I don't have to treat Jonathan like that, you know, month in guy anymore. He's, you know, he caught me in some damn paper cutter choke. I wasn't respecting his grips. Right. And I'm like, oh shit, where did that come from? I mean, that's awesome. So anyway, what
you got to stop pushing that on the table because it is quite loud.
Is it?
Yeah.
Dude, I'm, you know,
it's okay.
You got to give me a little fidget tool or something. Freaking old. I'm like, oh, shiny object.
Hold my hand.
How have you felt about your progression?
Oh man,
I know, put you on the spot.
No, I see 3 stripes on my belt, and I think back when I first started, even this past year, the other 3-4-stripe white belts that are now blue belts, I'm like, there's no way that I'm as good as they were when they had 3-4 stripes, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, man, is it 3 stripes? It's nice, you know, but do I have to turn it up?
That's another thing that literally in my experience continues to last. Because I remember when Stefan and Dan and Jung were brown belts, even purple belts. They're black belts now. And they felt so good when I was a white belt and a blue belt.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying they don't feel good now, but the time at that moment, in that moment,
what are you doing on the mats?
Easy. They felt almost like unbeatable in any fashion. Mm. Couldn't even get a positive grip. And I question myself. I'm like, I'm not as good as they were at this point. There's no way. Either I'm not crushing people like they would crush me or what I would see them do to other people. So I think that continues.
But continues.
Then most likely there are other white belts that look at Chris or Carrie or myself or Livy when they roll with us, they're like, they feel really freaking good. You know, like there's probably someone out there that says that. I mean, maybe not Chris, but Carrie.
Definitely not me.
I am sure there's a 50-year-old and up that has come in, rolled with you and been like, Chris feels strong. Not technical, but strong for his age group.
I can't really say anything because you, I basically messed with you earlier, so I'll take it.
Yeah. Eat the shit.
I will eat it happily right now until.
So, but yeah, that doesn't really go away.
Okay.
I mean, maybe it does at some point, but
not with me.
Yeah. Carrie was nodding her head as well. And it's like, for whatever reason, is that imposter syndrome? Is that totally. Like a piece of that?
Yeah. It totally is. Yeah, but that's a sign of a healthy ego. That's a sign of someone that's really introspective and really not
Thank
just
you.
Saying I'm.
Thank you.
Not just saying like, well, I'm the shit. No, I totally deserve this. You know, we were talking about that several episodes ago. Like,
every you deserve your belt and stuff.
Yeah, it takes about a year before I feel even comfortable
right.
at that level. So
yeah, I until this the first tournament I did at brown belt, I was like. Constantly questioning if I should even be there. I had to always like think about like trusting Andrew and his opinion, which you're going to have in some people, you're going to have internal battles with that. You know, am I just his friend? We both have golden retrievers. So he ends up belting me, you know, something like that. I'm sure there's some people out there in this world that think that, you know, anyways, so
not anybody that's rolled with you. That's the point. I mean,
you never know.
So,
you never know. So there's that constant battle. Why was I saying that? I was saying that for some reason.
I'm not bailing your ass out.
Imposter syndrome. Yeah. So, having that trust in it, of the process and of the
And Andrew's, no matter who you are, Andrew's really good at looking at the individual, regardless of anything else, and really evaluating their jiu-jitsu, their progression. As a complete martial artist, he's really good at kind of judging. I mean, you know, we have to rely on him.
Oh, yeah, and the tournament, that's what I was saying. Yeah. So, and then once I did the tournament, you're going against someone of your similar rank that... You don't know their skills. They don't know yours. They're going to be amped up. There's extra sauce in there. Like they're going to feel. I heard a great quote from, I think it was John Combs. He was on a podcast. He's a black belt competitor. Really good. And he said at every tournament, that first match, they will always feel like the strongest person you've ever gone against. You'll just be like, wow, this person is so strong. Holy smokes. Because your nerves are there. They have some more adrenaline. So they are, you know, strong in that moment. They're exerting themselves a little bit more. But the thing is, you probably feel the same to them. They're going to be like, wow, this guy's actually really strong. He has really good grips. It's very, very common, you know, especially in the beginning of your tournament life. So once I did that tournament, I was able to win a couple matches. And I was like, dang. Maybe I do deserve to, because I knew that the guy was pretty good. So that it's little things that help validate and you have to kind of put in your pocket for later when you're having those difficult times and questioning yourself.
That's a great advice. Switching gears a little bit, what would you right now, if you had to give advice to yourself a year ago, how to approach this whole thing? Do you have anything else that you would think that would help you just from your own advice, looking back a year?
What would white belt?
Yeah.
Jonathan.
What would three stripe tell one stripe?
Yeah.
Zero stripe. Just keep showing up. Yeah. Consistency is a big thing. Even though like you guys have said it before, but there will be days where you hit a lot of different things and you feel great. But then there'll be other days where your stress cup is a little bit more full and you just struggle even through the drills and, you know, stretching is tough too. But even on like, even I think the days that you really don't want to go, those are the best days to go. Yeah.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
Yep.
I was just saying that. Just someone asked me last week, how do I maintain such a training schedule and like still show up?
Mm-hmm.
Forgot who it was. And they said that it was interesting because they said, I just don't have the discipline to keep showing up. So how do you stay motivated? And what I said was, well, it's actually, that's ass backwards. Yeah. Is motivation is only going to get me so far. It's the discipline to do it when I'm not motivated and to just be like, this is my day I go.
Mm-hmm.
This is the day I do 2 sessions today, whatever your bugaboo is. Mm-hmm. And so that discipline is actually going to be what drives you forward and keeps you consistent, not motivation. Motivation, I think, is really good to have. And I think there's Jocko or someone like that said it better than me, said this whole spiel. But I truly believe in that motivation will only get you so far. You're going to have discipline in your schedule and in your life to actually stay consistent.
I'm a little neurotic with it. If I don't want to do something, mm-hmm. I play this little beat myself up like you're just a wuss and what the hell are you doing? You're a piece of shit. You all right?
And is then it I my just, voice in your head?
No, unfortunately, it's mine. Oh. Yours would be better. At least I could be like, damn it, Bill.
Shut up, Bill.
No, but I do. And it's just like, if I don't want to do something, then I'm damn sure going to do it. Because then that's almost like a trigger for me. It's like, oh, man, I don't feel like doing it.
It's like you're sticking your own finger in your chest.
That's
like,
right.
Yeah.
I feel like you and Bill are cut from the same cloth because Bill is very similar.
Yeah.
His internal
dialogue. Tough talk myself.
Well, we have some similar upbringings in some ways too, though. So
yeah, I wonder if that does come from like a I don't know if resentment is the right word, but some sort of
spite
with mm-hmm. our dad's piecing out on us.
Mm-hmm.
If there's something there,
I think there is actually feeling like you have to take control of the situation.
Yeah,
right. There might be something weird. I'll have to ask my buddy. Former F-18 pilot who's now a new doctor of psychology who we're going to have on here soon. Nice. I'm going to ask him what that is, and he knows me too. He'll pick me apart.
That'll be funny though.
Yeah. So that's your main advice for yourself.
Just keep showing up.
Yeah. Mm. Anything else on how you would approach things or, you know, just keep showing up is great advice, but is there,
I think something that I noticed that Jonathan did and probably I assume not intentional, but maybe it was. So you're on the passive side of the scale, right? And then there's people that are on the overly aggressive, quote unquote, spazzy, yada, yada side. From what I noticed, and I took notice of this probably 2-3 months ago,
mm-hmm.
is maybe your most consistent and most common person I see you do a lot of rounds with, like sparring rounds, is Brad.
Yeah.
I'm not saying Brad is spazzy. I'm not saying Brad is way over here on this side of the spectrum. But Brad is tough as nails. He's very strong.
He's larger than you.
He's much bigger. He's very strong. He has really good intensity. I got to bring a lunch when I go with that guy. And you having that guy as... am I wrong? Is he kind of one of the main guys you spar with?
I love rolling with Brad. Yeah.
And because he is very opposite to your style, it's almost like that guy has been able to help bring this intensity out of you because you're probably not worried that you're going to hurt him, which is like, as the passive guy in the beginning, I was the same thing. I would always worry about that I'm going to hurt him. I'm going to like offend him. You're not offending Brad.
No.
Right. That seemed like a really good, whether it was conscious or not, decision for someone on your end of the spectrum. I'm not calling you retarded, but a little downsy.
No, and I know Brad won't hurt me as well. You know, like we've drilled together.
That's key, right?
Yeah.
Because you trust him as well, too. Mm-hmm. But I agree with you. And it's especially after you roll with a guy like Brad, you get in someone with your own weight class and skill level. It's like they're like, you're like, oh, wow, I can handle mm-hmm. this a little more, right?
Shout out to Brad for like losing basically a human off of his body.
Oh god, amazing!
Just through jiu-jitsu. Well, I think he runs a little bit, but just through jiu-jitsu. Well,
yeah,
yeah. and diet and
yeah.
other lifestyle changes, man. I've seen that so many times. People just, they figure out they're going to do it, and the transformation's incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at your own.
Yeah, I mean, he's lost more than me.
Wow.
Yeah, he's done really well. But that, I think that was really good, especially for where you were starting in your journey. What was that, intentional? No. Just kind of happens. You just like the guy. And
yeah, super nice guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is your main worry, or not worry, but what are you most concerned about as you progress to blue belt? Because it's going to happen.
I love being a white belt. It's so awesome.
Why?
Because everyone's so nice.
So what are you, this is where I'm going with this, right? So what do you feel is going to happen?
There will be, like, I'm going to be expected to know a little bit about a little bit. And I like my wrists too.
Oh, we'll still wrist lock you. I don't care if you're white.
I put an embargo on it. I stopped doing it because I was like, oh, he uses his hands for like really important stuff. So
yeah, he is a surgeon, you know.
But I'll throw like, let me see your hand. I'll throw like something like this at him. I'm not putting much pressure, but I'll do it. And then he'll be like, okay. It's like I need to make eye contact with him just to like let him know.
You know what though? Like when I roll with you guys, I feel like it's not just one submission you have to get me at. In like it's, and not just one a minute either. It's like if you want to get a submission, you have to try to go for like two or three at the same time. You know,
that's, I do like this. Yeah. It's, think of this,
it's so funny.
Think of this, if you're gonna make a bowl of ice cream,
of course ice cream,
are you just gonna have easy over there? Are you just gonna have vanilla? No. Are you just gonna have your mint chocolate chip? You could.
Are you not going to put sprinkles on it?
I was going to say toppings.
And then what else are you going to do? You're going to do some hot fudge, aren't you?
Mm.
Are you going to throw maybe a couple pieces of fruit on there? I don't know.
That's weird.
Hey, I don't know.
With mint chocolate chip?
I don't know. Okay. I'm just saying.
Hey, Olivia, we're inclusive here. Please. Yeah.
are you going to throw maybe a couple gummy worms? I just had that. Wasn't my favorite. But I tried it, and that's
the
point.
You tried it because you didn't know. That's you had true. No idea until you took one out of your mouth.
And what was like, it called? Oreo dirt pie.
Yeah.
Oh. It was called Oreo dirt pie, and I was like, "That looks kind of good." And then I take a big bite. I mean, big bite. And there was like, I thought someone put a fingernail in it or something, and I was like, "What the hell is this?" She's like, "It's got gummies in it." I was like, "Why?" That's what a dirt pie is. I have no idea.
Aren't you from Kentucky?
Yeah.
That's, you know, I think they made it there.
Wow.
I don't know.
Assuming, I guess. But they, that was brutal. So that's the point. Ice cream, toppings, taste better. Jiu-jitsu tastes better when you're doing 2 to 3 submissions at one time. Exhibit A.
I see. So you still haven't asked. So what are you worried about?
I'm worried about.
Yes.
Yeah.
In other words, are you worried? I understand not knowing things, right? I understand. But is there something like we're going to like all of a sudden we say, oh, a blue belt.
Well, not just the like, upper belts finally being like, okay, well, fun time's over. Now let's get to work. Right. And then also it's the white belts. I feel that's what I'm like, because
they're coming after you.
Yeah.
That's
That's
the bigger one to worry
about. I think so, too.
Really?
Yeah, because we're not going to mess with you that much.
You get a little bit worse.
A little bit. I'll talk some shit. I'm like Mo always says, all right, Chris, I'm not going to take it easy on you anymore. I'm like, dude, you never have.
No, it's when he says that and he goes, now make sure you come after me. Really come at me. And I'm like,
dude, come on. He cracks me up.
What? I'm just trying not to get wrist locked and almost plotted 3 times.
Yeah, thank you.
But the white belts are who I got to worry about more so.
Yeah. Yeah, because at that moment, they can now put a blue belt scalp on their belt.
Oh.
Maybe they've only caught a blue belt a couple times. Well, now there's a fresh blue belt, even though you're literally like you started the class as a white belt and now you're a blue belt. Like rolling after still counts.
Oh, yeah. They'll come after you.
See, Olivia had the same worry, I believe.
the thing is that with me, because I was the only blue belt female, there wasn't really any white belt females. I didn't have to really go through that. Like,
but you still had, you had worry about the first thing he said, which was an expectation of knowledge.
Oh yeah. That I for sure had. And I still do with every belt. So.
Yeah. Yeah. That comes and it gets more and more every single.
Oh yeah. Belt
it gets sure. more.
Yeah.
More and more. Wow.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, it's similar to like education, right?
Yeah.
You know, you get your associates or you get your bachelor's. Oh, someone finds out you got a master's.
What about when you're a med student versus after you graduated?
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Like so, people start asking you stuff.
Oh, Dr. King.
You're expected like, to know. You're like, oh, well.
Doctor, who are you talking about?
That, yeah. Is that how we have to address you?
No, please don't. Okay.
I know he's been trying to get us to, but we say, no, we're not going to do that, dude.
Yeah, Carrie and I always walk around. We call each other doctor around the house all the time.
Well, fortunately, Carrie does not ask us to do that like you do, but.
I have a question for you, Chris.
Yeah?
When you get a package in the mail, do you ever say just what the doctor ordered?
Oh, man.
Oh, that's terrible. That no, but great. I will from that now on.
Like to the FedEx guy.
What Carrie and I jokingly have done before, if I get that something that says Mr. Christopher Hardy, I'm like, I shall not open this. Send it back. It's so ridiculous. Oh. Now that's pretentious. Going back to our previous podcast. That is a great one, Olivia. Oh. I shall use that.
You got three doctors right now. They're all going to use it. Every time you bring him dinner now, if you cook a steak or something, he's going to be like, oh, just what the doctor.
But then she'll say, well, that's just what the doctor made.
Yeah, exactly.
It'll be exactly what the kittens eat. Right.
So we got a mic Carrie up. She has some gems here she's throwing at us. You guys aren't able to hear. She'll you know what like we're going to do? We should mic Carrie up, but not put it on this one. Only do like a Patreon.
Right.
So then you could hear Carrie's comments. From
she'll the be Patreon. The Artie Lang of
Russia.
A little less cocaine, though.
Well, I mean,
you got to bring cocaine up every episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's up to you.
So
15 minutes and you lose your focus. Is that
oh, yeah,
saying?
Man. Yeah.
Welcome to the podcast.
I know, right? We're like ADD big time here.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's going to happen. You keep showing up. You're going to get there. It's just another milestone. And just, you know, take your whippings as I come.
Is so when you have three stripes,
mm-hmm.
did the first one, and this is a little taboo, whatever. I like talking about that kind of stuff. But did it mean a lot?
Mm-hmm.
That first stripe, did it like, was it like, oh my gosh. Like, what was the feeling? Relief, excitement.
I was a little shocked. Like, again, I didn't feel like I deserved it at all. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't feel like I was making much progress, but I was so stoked. I was like, this is amazing. Look how shiny it is. Mm-hmm. You know, I was showing everybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
So happy about it.
Did you show anyone in your family?
Yeah. 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 Took it home to my wife. I was like, look at this. And she's like, it's okay, cool.
What does that mean?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I feel like the second and third stripe, though, like those hit a little heavier because it's like, oh, well, I guess I do know something.
Mm.
And Andrew trusts that I know something. I don't feel it, but I guess I do know something, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think those are pretty good markers of starting to understand and acquire like base and stuff like that, you know.
And something I think Andrew says all the time, you know, when you do get promoted, especially the belt promotions, I almost always to the person see an uptick in their skill and performance like within a month after promotion.
Yeah.
It's like almost like you start almost in your mind living up to, it's like a confidence. I mean, I don't know what it is. Do you?
Well, it's kind of, for sure. I see that as well. And it's kind of like the 4-minute mile deal. where it was like impossible. Your heart's there. The world thought your heart would explode if you, you know, even tried, basically. And then one guy does it, and it was, what was it? It was like within the next 3 months, like four other people did it. And now that's like, there's high schoolers that can literally break that. And it's almost like a confident, once we know, okay, this is real, we can do this, it's possible. It's like you're rising to the occasion, your floor is higher.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. Yeah, thank you. I like that. I hate complimenting you too, but it was good.
That's two.
It's two compliments in one podcast. We got to have to edit that out or
the
something.
The thumbnail is just going to be my face.
It's always your face.
Wisdom.
It's your face with me making some crazy face and that you always catch.
You caught on to that, huh?
Oh, for sure.
It's funny.
I did one where I made like, you were kind of like making a weird face, but I photoshopped your eye like even bigger.
Oh, I know.
And you look like you're like demented, like from Total Recall. And no one really said anything, but I got one message on Instagram. What's up with Chris's face? Like he took the vaccine.
Well, actually, that's the eye I wear the monocle in, like Mr. Peanut. And then when I take it out, my eyes just stuck that way.
Yeah. It's cute though. Fits you.
So, over the past year, what is your experience? What has jiu-jitsu done for you? Positive and anything you want to tell me?
Yeah, it's been really good in terms of mental health for me, more than anything else. Mm-hmm. You know, keeping me grounded. I didn't like there was an outlet for me to kind of just go and, I mean, for me, getting smashed and like rolling was because I don't have as much of an ego when it comes to winning or losing, just being able to physically exert myself. Mm-hmm. That's been amazing for just how peaceful I feel afterwards. Mm-hmm. You know, before, a little bit of road rage, you know, when the kids wouldn't eat, I'd be a little annoyed. But now it's like I drive home, I'm going 55 and a 60. Like just super relaxed.
It's odd how losing, technically losing, mm-hmm. being smashed or being the nail can put us in that kind of mindset.
Right.
Calmness.
Right.
It's very odd.
I know a lot of people have said this before. It's kind of a cliche, but it's active mindfulness is what it is, because you're not, most people at least when they're rolling, aren't thinking about, oh damn, my taxes are due or whatever, right? You're kind of in the moment, even though you're, you know, extreme physical exertion. And that has a lot of good effects on the brain. And that's the biggest thing, I think, for me too, is that the mental health aspect of it. So you feel like you're kind of more chilled out and more even, mm-hmm. even tempered or?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because exactly like you're saying, for 6 minutes, I don't have to think about anything else. Mm-hmm. Like I'm almost in a way forced not to, mm-hmm. right? And just to disconnect and have like 6 minutes, it's, for me at least, been very healthy. Yeah.
So you think it's helped you cope with different adversity too?
Mm-hmm. With lots of stress.
Okay. It like trickles down to just being at home and mm-hmm. having home life or work life or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, I hear that a lot. Anything else that you've felt like you've improved in general in your daily life from now compared to where you were a year ago?
I feel a lot more disciplined, a lot more focused.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just, you know, it all starts with just going to class, mm-hmm. right? Taking that first step, you know, going, getting that. And every time that I've thought, oh, I really don't want to go, like, I feel awful. Like I'm like sore maybe from a workout, or I'm like, I got a lot of stuff to do the next day after I go. And like, I'm walking to my car. I don't think I've ever said, well, that was a waste of time. Mm-hmm. Right. Every time I'm like, wow, that was great.
Yeah.
I'm glad I showed up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Excellent.
I have a question, and it's a hard hitter.
Okay.
Who would you say is a tougher role between us?
Oh my gosh.
When you say us, are you talking about me and you?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Here we go.
Now, when I say tougher,
mm-hmm. let's set some parameters.
Who's meaner? Because I think I know.
And Jonathan, you can say whatever you want.
He can't touch you.
I am not going to. No. This is a safe space.
Will you save me, Carrie?
No, if he's going to ask a jacked up question, answer it honestly.
I feel like Dr. Hardy
oh,
is harder, meaner to me to make me better.
It's a good way to say it. Mm-hmm.
In what way? Compared to Bill. Then since you, I'm just going to expound. I just want to know more.
Expound.
Pressure. Yeah. Yeah.
It really puts a smush in.
Like a piece of gum.
Yeah.
But Bill, you're super tough too.
Cause you don't got to jiggle me, my friend.
No, I get it. Why? If we can pass your guard, we get our blue belt. Right. I get it.
Right. Who?
I will say though, at least Chris will submit me just once or twice. I feel like the couple times that I've rode with you, it's like one every minute.
I'd say that's a little bit of the MO.
So then who's meaner then?
Well, it depends. I mean, that's why I said let's define the parameters.
Who do you get more out of rolling with?
Okay, this is just
getting ridiculous. Jonathan's going to leave like, I hate Jonathan now.
I learn a lot of different things because I feel like you guys have two different styles.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, very much so.
Mm-hmm. We used to do a lot of the same moves, though. Mm-hmm. It's kind of split a little bit, but we used to do a lot of the same stuff. But I think as we kind of found our own game and in our mobilities and stuff like that is different, that it makes it so we found our own game and then we kind of started almost diverging a little bit, but we have some A game stuff that's like very similar.
Super similar.
It's kind of interesting.
Well, I rip stuff off of him all the time though. I'm like, ooh, that was cool. Right. So I think we were both doing step over chokes on everybody for, probably about 6 months. Head and arm chokes, stuff like that. So we still have our go to A game stuff that are very similar.
Okay.
But if he grabs the lapel on me, I'm like, oh, damn it.
I've been nice about that.
You have. You haven't been. It's a dirty Sith Lord type of game, that dirty lapel game.
Typically, if you see me start playing lapel, I'm either scared, I'm losing, I feel like I need to like slow down what's happening because I'm just slowly like losing. Like I'm slowly like the person's like for sure gonna pass my
guard. Is that why you play lapel with me all the time?
Yes, it is, because you're mean about it. Gosh. Look how happy she is about that insult. She's so happy. Yeah. So that's when I play lapel.
I had to get that in there.
Not that that means I'm never, since I never play lapel on you anymore, that I'm never threatened. That's not what that means.
Well, I didn't take it that way.
Well, that's what it means.
He's like, I'm never threatened by you anymore.
Yeah.
You old man.
Yeah.
If you get lucky to flop on top of me, I guess it's a pain, but otherwise. That's good stuff, though. Yeah, that was you really put him on the spot on that one.
I did.
Yeah.
I want to see a little bit of sweat on his brow.
Yeah. Well, he does have better hair than both of us, for sure.
Gosh, I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, no.
What's your biggest memory so far?
Probably my first... And I guess only competition at this point, right? I mean, outside of getting the stripes, I'm a little surprised that I went out like 3-4 months into it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. What was I thinking?
No, dude, it was great.
What that thought process going? Because one, you're not on the super competitive level, as in mentality wise. Not that you're not competitive, but you're not the overexerter like guy that is coming in like that. So it's I have to imagine extremely challenging just from a mental perspective, especially when people are telling you like the intensity in a tournament is more than you've ever felt in the gym. How did that process go, the lead up? like mentally? Were you sweating? Was it a challenge? Did you think about backing out constantly?
Even getting to sign up was tough.
We had a bunch of discussions about it.
Yeah.
At work.
Yep. Yeah.
Should I compete? Why am I competing? Am I going to be hurt? Mm-hmm. You know, I resonated a lot with your thought process on one of the earlier podcasts. Mm-hmm. I was like, man, this competition, if I show up and I like, if I pull a move and I'm like, just let it go or don't finish it, like how will that affect me? There was a lot of a big mental game associated with it. And so getting to sign up was really tough. And then the day of, the week of going into it, oh my gosh, I couldn't eat. I couldn't sleep.
Yeah.
I was shaking the whole time.
Just when you start thinking about it, you're like, start shaking.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, I remember I was coaching him and it was great to watch him get out there and go after it because he was a different guy after that tournament too.
Yeah.
That's very true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's not as scary. Once you're done with it, you're like, that's just what I do at the gym. Like, it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's no different. Just a different person. It's like a gym visitor.
A bunch of people are watching you.
But they're not.
That's right. They are, but they're not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes there might be, if we have a bunch of teammates there at the last tournament I did, there just happened to be, because it was local at Everett, so we happened to have like 20 people. And I happened to run into some friends that I hadn't seen in a while, so they were watching. So I kind of felt that. But at the most, 25, 30 people, right?
Well, for white belts that are on the fence about competing, since you've had that competition, what would you tell them?
Do it. Yeah. Even 3-4 months and even sooner. It was so valuable because it was like, and like credit to all of you guys here, like you really helped kind of coach me, put me in the right mindset, pointed out, you know, certain things that I should focus on, work on. And there was so much growth, I feel, not in just the preparation, but also during the competition. Not that like the nerves, sure, it was great to overcome that and work through that, but it was also afterwards knowing, okay, so I can roll at a higher intensity. You know, other people are going at, you know, at that rate as well. So when I drill, I have to drill a lot more intentionally. You know, when I roll, I have to focus more on like the finer details. And if anything, like I knew what I had to work on. I mean, just a glimpse of what I had to work on, you know, because I got a lot of gaps, but there were certain things that I thought like, and it motivated me to be like, okay, well, I'm really bad at this. So I'm going to focus on that for the next 6-12 months minimum. Right. Yeah. So, and that's one thing that you guys really like helped me out with too. I mean, like bringing it down, like just focus on one thing for a year, you know, and just get better at that. Cause I'm watching a ton of YouTube videos, right? And I'm like, oh, that looks really cool. I'm going to try that. But then when in like rolling afterwards, I'm like, in the heat of it, I think, wait, I don't remember how that guy explained that. Right. So just focusing on that one thing for like an extended period of time, I think,
Whether it's, you know, guard retention or getting out of side control or something like that.
Yeah, and all of that I just gleaned from just one competition so far. Yeah.
When you were in the competition, was there anything that stuck out? Like maybe it was the intensity was way more or it wasn't as much as we built up or you couldn't hear anything, or you could hear like, oh my gosh, I can hear the crowd. Was there anything that really stuck out?
I'm going to take it back to what you first said too.
Mm-hmm.
The other guys were so strong.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh my gosh, you know? But besides that, I couldn't hear anything. I went and like, I was just so nervous the whole day.
Yeah.
But I learned so much from it.
Yeah. There was a couple of things that, I've ran across recently for, that help with my mentality when it comes to competing. And one was a Kobe Bryant Instagram clip, but it like genuinely helped. And it was him, he was talking like in an interview or something, and he's talking to someone about the fear of failure. And he's like, it does nothing for us. Right. Like there's, I think we've talked about before about nerves are a good thing. Right. And you can use that as like positive energy. Like it's good to have nerves. Right. But this, he was talking about is, let's say you go in, you compete, whether it's a basketball game or whatever, that if you do well, okay, you still go to practice the next day. You still do the same thing. Let's say you lose. You don't show up. You do poorly. You show up to the tournament, but you don't perform well. Tomorrow's the same day. You still will go to practice to get better than even whether you won or lost. So it's all the same. Everything after this moment is going to be the same, right? You're going to learn from this situation here, whether you do well or not in that moment. You're still going to go and get better and practice and continue the journey. I was like, dang.
That's great. I like that. And you know how many people won't put themselves out there like that? That's so far out of most people's comfort zone. Not only is jiu-jitsu itself, but a jiu-jitsu tournament, your first one, it's so far out of the comfort zone that you can't help but grow from it, no matter the outcome.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. And I think that's really good for us as human beings, is that kind of struggle. Overcoming doesn't necessarily mean winning. It means going out there and doing it.
Another thing that recently a training partner named Brian, he's brown belt. He was brought, well, his fiance, Andrea, was brought up recently. He told me another thing that his previous coach was that told him about competing. And, oh, man, conviction all day. I have it here. And he told me that this is what his coach had told him about competing. And his coach said, when I compete, my goal is to prove to myself that I'm not the shittiest black belt on the planet. You can replace black belt with any belt, really. And just by showing up means he's not that guy. Just by showing up, he's not the shittiest white belt, brown belt, whatever it is. And there's something to that, I think, completely. And once again, not that everyone needs to compete. I don't think everyone needs to compete. But if you are committing to it and you want to compete and you want to just challenge yourself in that way, I think that's a great way to think
about it. That's an awesome way to think about it. And if you're on the fence, you should do it. If you're even thinking about it, do it. Because
you have a desire, then.
Yeah, it's super valuable. I mean, Andrew says this all the time, how much better people get after competition.
He's right. Yeah.
Yes, and I think a big part is that lead up. You're going to drill down. Mm-hmm. You're going to shrink jiu-jitsu down. You're going to get better at a couple things. So you're going to immediately, you're just more focused for a couple weeks, 4 weeks, or whatever it is for the lead up. And then what you learn on the day of.
And you see how we do it at the academy too. The people are competing. We'll give them some competition rounds and stuff like that.
Yeah, pull them in front of everybody.
Yeah. Cascade does a great job with just being supportive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Super cool.
And my mentality going into the last tournament and when I do my next one is I have a certain game that I want to implement. Mm-hmm. So, for example, I wanted to get into this move called, it's a spider guard, but it's a double spider. So, anyways. And then it's a triangle setup. I really wanted to make sure I got into that position to try to go for that triangle. I also wanted to do a specific guard pull into a sweep. Okay. And then I had a lapel series that I wanted to, if I was going to pull guard, I was going to go into that lapel series, reverse De La Worm. So there was three things I had in my head that I was like, the goal isn't even to win necessarily. Just get into my positions. And if the guy has good defense to those positions, good on him. If I don't do them completely perfect, okay. There's room for improvement in those. But I knew that these were three things that I really wanted to make sure I did. And that I really focus on getting into, and I got into all three of those. So nice. Whether I won the match or not, it, after the tournament, I was like, you know what? My goal was hit. I got into this one, and I got into that one, and I got into that one.
Which is hard to do. It's in an uncontrolled environment. It's not mm-hmm. like your training partners and stuff. The guys, right. Know, they're trying to
well, go I mean, after just the look. I forgot which match it was. The
second one.
That was when I got in lapel.
Yep.
The first one, I got into the spider thing.
Yep.
But it took me like 3 minutes.
Yep.
To of I pulled guard and I was in kind of like a quasi X guard, single mm-hmm. leg, X K guard thing. And it took me literally because he was just very solid. He was just to get from that guard into spider guard or a lasso. Took me like literally 3-4 minutes. So, you know, but I still, once I got into it, it was boom, goal hit.
But that's positive. That's a win for Bill.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, so it's super cool the way to think about it.
Yeah. Sometimes you can go into a tournament and not to kind of take your mind off the winning and loss and like putting your own value,
right?
Attaching it to whether you won or lost. Now, I did want to win because it was a revenge match.
It was a revenge match.
Against that cheater McGeeter.
Yeah. Well, we won't talk that about it necessarily.
But
I went against the same guy in a previous mm-hmm. match.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there was a questionable reset.
But, shenanigans.
But it was, but you know, no excuses.
Yeah.
The guy's still really good.
And mm-hmm. he's really nice too.
He's a super nice guy.
So, but taking my self-worth off of whether I was going to win or lose. Mm-hmm. I put my self-worth on if I could get into my positions. So
kind of redefining.
A little bit. Yeah. A little bit. Yeah. And it took just my mind off of focusing on winning or losing and just how do I get into them, right? So it's hyper-focused on strategy rather than
well, the and end you're result. Just trying to impose his game on someone,
yeah.
which is super cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, as opposed to reacting, being on the reactive end, you know, just trying to survive someone else, trying to do that to them. It's super valuable what Bill is doing because he's really trying to, hey, I'm going to just be patient and really try to impose my game and not try to play the other guys.
I bet there was a lot of growth in preparing, but also mm-hmm. that, yeah,
yep.
just those roles.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah. It's a really good thing. I think I'm, you know, Bill and I were talking, I'm going to try to do some more of it myself. The thing is, it becomes sometimes I get a little single-minded in preparation mm-hmm. in myself where, mm-hmm. you know, I also want to be a good teammate too. Sometimes I'm so focused on, you know, I got a competition coming up,
yeah.
right? You know what yep. I mean? It's easy to get kind of that competition blinders on. I still want to be, you know, available to everyone and not shirk any other
yeah.
kind of responsibilities.
And I focus a lot on freaking other people's opinions of me. So.
Except for mine. I call you a piece of shit all the time. It doesn't seem to bother you.
You suck. And it's one of those things where, yeah, he's like the guy in Happy Gilmore that's with Shooter.
With Shooter.
Yeah. But I that's what gets my nerves probably the most is that, let's say I have teammates there and I don't perform well. They're going to just think I suck. And that, like, kills me. Or Andrew's going to think I suck. And I know. It's like an internal battle. I know that's not going to happen. But then I think it might happen.
I think you just don't want to disappoint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, I'm the same way. A little people-pleasing type. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm like that. Very yeah. much like that.
All right, if someone, a white belt, is like, Bill seems pretty good. He like he does a lot of submissions and it's fun to watch because he does creative stuff. But if I like just get smushed, like it's like, you know, your big brother just got beat up on the monkey bars.
Interesting. Okay.
And so
yeah.
I worry about that.
People thinking lesser.
But I've never, when I've had other teammates that I look up to lose, I never thought that about them.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Right.
My good friend Aurelius, he lost a match or tournament, whatever, not too long ago. And I thought literally zero about it. I wasn't like, oh man, he's maybe not as good as I thought. No, I still think he's an absolute killer. So it's very odd.
If you ever rolled with him, there's no question about that.
Right.
Yeah. So
do we have any foot questions?
Yeah. And I want to kind of segue into that. That was a terrible segue, by the way. just wanted to bring that up. We need to work on that a little bit.
Yeah.
No, there's no easy segue. Since Jonathan is a foot and ankle expert, there are certain things. First of all, I would like to actually invite you to talk about some things that you think are applicable to jiu-jitsu specifically. Then we may ask you a couple little kind of pointed questions.
Sure.
But yeah, what do you think is the most valuable thing you could impart to our community from as a foot and ankle guy?
There's a few basic things I think that we can cover that might be helpful. I mean, starting just with skin, nails, right? Mm-hmm. Foot fungus. You guys touched on that in an earlier podcast, but just to focus it down to the foot itself. Mm-hmm. Because the fungus really only lives on the outside layer of the skin. But the problem with foot fungus, as opposed to like ringworm anywhere else, is that top layer of skin is way, way thicker on the bottom of the foot, right? Mm. So where it would take 6-8 weeks daily applications of an antifungal anywhere else, it takes usually minimum 2-3 months. But also what's important too is your shoe gear, right? Just because you clean out the skin, right? The plantar, the skin on the bottom of the foot, doesn't mean you might not be reinfecting yourself by putting your foot back into your shoe gear.
And just to be clear, since we're both medical people, we're talking about tinea pedis, known as athlete's foot.
So
know what we're talking about. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And the disclaimer at the beginning of the show applies for Jonathan as well.
Please.
Yeah, this is not medical advice. He's just passing information.
Yeah.
So Lysol, if you do deal with this, struggle with this, then Lysol every time you step out of your shoes, just spray real quick.
Right? In your shoe.
In your shoe.
Not on your feet.
Not on your... Very good point. Okay. In the shoes, not on your feet. And then topical creams, minimum twice a day, every day, minimum 3 months.
What do you like over-the-counter topical for that? You know, like, do you like like a Lamisil or a tenactin spray or anything like that? Or
I like the fungicidals. So fungicidal that actually kill the fungus. So that's terbinafine or clotrimazole. That's Lamisil or Lotrimin, right? Those actually kind of perforate the cell wall and cause apoptosis for the fungus, but it takes a long time because it has to penetrate.
Apoptosis means cell death.
Mm, that's cool.
Yeah.
Cool word for that.
It's also known as apoptosis if you don't pronounce the other P. I've seen fights about that. But anyway,
is this like a dorky,
so way nerdy,
little pretentious?
I saw it called a apoptosis once because you didn't pronounce the P.
No, we've actually Carrie and I have been in little meetings where one person calls it apoptosis, and one calls it apoptosis.
One person says homage and
homage. Anyway, so can you go over those two over the counter ones again?
Lamisil, Lotrimin.
You like those two before? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Others are fungistatic. They just prevent the reproduction. I don't think they've been proven to do as well, right? If you apply them, so like nail fungus is a totally different animal, right? Topicals work after 9 months, and this is from the dermatology literature systematic review. It's 13-30% success rate.
Wow. Sounds good.
After 9 months, right? Jublia, the newest one.
What is that?
That's another, it's more of a droplet because the antifungals over the counters are more creams. And the tough part is we think that it has a tough time penetrating through the nail. So Jublia is this drop that goes on the nail that supposedly goes around and underneath. Success rate has been shown 15% after 4 years.
Oh my gosh.
Doesn't seem great.
That's terrible.
No.
Well, what is that, the generic, what is Jublia? What is the compound? I mean, I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but is it another, like a ketoconazole, another azole type of antifungal?
I believe so.
Okay. But it's oil form,
I recall. Yes. So And so from what I understand, we can't mix two compounds and label it as an antifungal, right? So the idea was, how do we get the antifungal to penetrate through?
Right.
Right. And that the solution or the idea with that was, if we make it not a cream, but more of a droplet, that it hopefully would penetrate through.
That was the idea, like for tea tree oil and stuff like that, right? Because it's oil based and it has antifungal properties. What's the literature on that?
So there's literature on from the dermatology community as well as us. And so the studies aren't great because there's no clear definition as to what a fungal cure is. Is it that you don't have clinical signs, or if you take a sample and you send it out, right? Because you take a sample before, yes, it is fungus. Then you take a sample after, which makes more, the most sense to me. But there's no real consensus in the studies, right? But we haven't found, at least with the studies that come to mind are with Vicks Vapor Rub, right? It doesn't have a, it doesn't clear the fungus, but it does make the nail softer and clear, right? So, but patients are generally all very, very satisfied afterwards, right?
Because it's the aesthetic they really don't like.
It's the aesthetic, right? Usually they're not as commonly painful. Certainly there are certain circumstances where nails can be very painful, just because of how dense they are, and especially inside shoe gear. But there was another review done by dermatology. This is the systematic review where they've studied all sorts of different over-the-counter cures, Listerine soaks, apple cider vinegar soaks, Vaseline, Vicks. They found that at least to soften the nail, Vaseline, Vicks, and tea tree oil were pretty darn good, right? But it is important to note, too, taking a step back, that not all dystrophic or kind of funny-looking nails are nail fungus. Yeah, really, like maybe 50% of the time, is it truly nail fungus?
You have to actually send it out for to look under.
We should. Well, I mean, to start with the over-the-counters and the topicals, it's, you know, there's not that many like life-threatening side effects or organ failure type of situations. But with the oral medication, the antifungal pill, terbinafine, but more itraconazole before, it's important to know that it's fungus before you, I think it's important to know that it's fungus before you treat it, but also check for the liver enzymes to make sure that there's no pre-existing liver damage, because that those pills have a pretty high or it's not high, it's relatively safe, but if you do have pre-existing liver damage then or conditions, then it can be pretty toxic to your liver.
The few times I prescribed that in the Navy, I would follow their liver enzymes.
Like,
just to make sure, because it's hard on the bottom line is these drugs, what Jonathan is talking about is they're processed, they're detoxified in the liver, and they can be really hard on the liver. Sometimes you typically don't want to drink alcohol with them while you're taking it. It's kind of a double whammy.
And it's like a couple week treatment.
No, no, it's long.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So itraconazole, 1 week every month for minimum 3 months. Terbinafine is one a day for 3 months. Oh, wow. There are newer studies coming out with pulse dosing. So similar to itraconazole, dosing with terbinafine that have shown like less and less liver toxicity. But
just remember, because we're taking these things systemically, right? And, you know, there's always a chance of more toxicity as opposed to applying it, you know, directly to the nail.
Yeah.
More of a topical thing. So, you know, that's kind of what Jonathan's talking about, getting an idea. Are we actually treating fungus?
Right.
That'd be really important.
Yeah.
So what would you say about this right here?
I was waiting for it.
You got to just throw that out. God.
I got to put on my
glasses. Is he being serious right now?
I got like a... My nail is split in half.
Oh, gosh.
How do I heal that?
So the nail itself, I mean, for I'm treatment wise, I'm super conservative.
You should have seen him at Lowe's yesterday.
What did I do?
What happened at Lowe's?
He's putting his feet on carpet
samples. Okay. Can we just take a sidebar?
That's important to know, though.
So, you know, there's carpet. We're shopping for carpet right now.
Sorry.
And you know, when you go to Lowe's or Home Depot, they have your samples and they got the big, they got the little squares, like in a bunch of them. Then they have the big pieces and they're folded over and you put your hand on it, right?
Yeah, you put your
hand. So hold up.
Wait.
Did you put your foot up?
No.
Or did you bring it
you
down?
You know, they have toilets there too on display, but you don't shit in them. You know that, right?
Watch your mouth.
Okay.
So... Who puts their hand on a carpet and feels?
Most normal people.
Yeah.
I did that. But it didn't feel realistic. So what I did, let me just show you.
This is, he legit did.
So get the camera on this, Olivia, because we got to see the demo here.
And I was rubbing it and I go.
No.
No way.
Yes. Yes.
Well, because you do. I do that in the carpet too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I did that with my toes.
And I go, what are you doing?
And then I walked to the next one. And I did it again.
Because you got to compare.
I'm like, what is going on?
Right, yes.
It's practical. It's I get
big,
that.
Big purchase.
I go, yeah. Mm-hmm. And people put their hands on this bill.
Well, apparently people put their feet on it too.
My feet are cleaner than those.
I mean, there might have been worse stuff put on those things, I'm sure.
That's what I'm saying. But I do get the odd visual of me putting my foot about shoulder height on this thing if someone walked around the corner. And I do wear booty shorts. So I get that could be a little weird. But
Chris is never touching those things again.
No, I mean, not that I... No, I know enough. I've seen enough crazy stuff not to kind of handle stuff at like a public freaking store.
Yeah.
Because there's freaks like Bill running around.
Excuse me.
You know, he probably also is like, well, you know, my dog likes to scoot his butt across the carpet too. And I want to make sure that it's soft on there too.
You're aggressive.
It's pretty aggressive.
I'm just saying I am able to make an educated choice now.
Okay.
In the sidebar.
So what what was that, by the way?
It doesn't look like fungus.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just a little kind of longitudinal fissure, kind of centrally.
Yeah, it's just like broke like 2 years ago. And I never have any like, I feel like my toes are actually pretty nice. Not bad, right?
One of the better ones I've seen.
Thank you. Not the best, but not the worst.
But that, mine are pretty bad. And that's coming from him. That's like a gold star.
Okay.
So you should go with that.
So my main thing is, how do I heal that nail? Because what happens is it's split right down the middle. I tape it every class. And inevitably, it will start to get better. It'll grow. And then it'll just something, it'll catch just a little bit and it just splits again. 2 years I've been dealing with that. So I got to tape my toe every class.
I would start with moisturizing the nail. So that's that Vicks, Vaseline, tea tree oil, because the nail's a firm and hard structure and the stresses that your toes go through, because you can get those injured.
Yes.
And potentially rupture a tendon.
Okay. You know, he's pointing at me because...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I actually rupture a tendon on my toe. And I didn't follow his advice. I taped it up and he's like, dude, what are you doing? I'm like, yeah, I'm a savage. I don't know.
So...
I would start with moisturizing it.
Okay.
Right? Because if it's firm and it grows out then, and it's still in that same sort of shape, then with any sort of step, it's a weak point. Mm, right? So until it grows all the way out, most aggressively, we can go numb the toe and remove the nail.
Uh-huh.
That's a little aggressive, I think.
Carrie just fist pumped. She's waiting to remove my toe.
Look at her. She has some lidocaine right here, brother. We'll do it right on there.
On the podcast. Patreon.
Oh.
Toe removal.
Who gets to do the digital block on him? Oh, she wants to do the digital block, too.
Does that have to do with my butt?
It could.
A long needle in your ass.
Jeez.
It's a long needle.
It's a long needle. Some needles are longer than others.
Your mom's been telling stories about me.
So, okay.
I would start there.
What about doing like a nail polish, like a clear nail polish to like help? Does that help structure it at all?
Yes and no.
Mm.
Yeah.
I tried it and it didn't work.
I bet he's trying to be a metro.
Metro what?
Nothing. So how, let me divert back.
Sure.
When you say moisturize it, what does that process look like? Do you like keep it on overnight? You wrap it?
That's a good question. Yeah, just a thin layer every day, twice a day, right? Because the majority of it's going to wipe off. You certainly can use, I mean, I've read about some techniques where other providers will use styrofoam, saran wrap, and just let it soak overnight. But that's a little aggressive. You can't really control that. I worry, especially in our more immunocompromised diabetic patients, if it goes too much, then we're looking at a wound and how long will that take to heal, right?
Is there, because I noticed this we see everyone's feet in the gym.
Yeah.
I notice a lot of dudes will have like half busted big toenails. Is there something they should do for, because usually when I see that, I see at least it
from my inexperienced eye, it looks like a fungus or something mm-hmm. on the nail or along the edges and stuff like that. Is there something they should do if they do have like half a nail or a quarter of a nail missing? Because it seems like that's probably exposed, more vulnerable skin.
I would tape it. So yeah, because so you don't like, not so much for the skin underneath. I mean, although it is a very thin skin and mm-hmm. worry about that in certain circumstances, but taping it just so it doesn't catch on anything.
Mm.
Right? Because really you don't want additional trauma.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Anything with, so in jiu-jitsu, we have a thing called active toes. You know what this is?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So how would you explain active toes from?
And end range dorsiflexion at the metatarsal phalangeal joint.
Good yeah. talk.
Yeah,
that sounded like verbal. You just made it up.
No.
But so that's a huge thing with, especially as you go through your jiu-jitsu journey, is you find yourself having active toes mm-hmm. all the time in almost every position. In the beginning, you don't even realize it, but that's how you create pressure and stuff like that. Is there anything that, because one thing that happens is their feet will get sore because they're starting to do active toes more. Maybe they have, you know, I don't know if it's weak arches or what the muscles or I don't know what that is, but is there something that people can do to strengthen the foot or the joints and the toes, just to strengthen the foot in general?
Like overall foot health.
Overall foot health. With what we do and in the positions that we're putting our feet in.
At least with active toes, I would say any sort of like stretching flexibility at those joints. It's tough because one of the things that we commonly encounter as well is arthritis, but more so in the big toe joint. This will work, the stretching, the strengthening for certain patient or
people,
friends, mm-hmm. But not so much for others. And you don't want to force that arthritis, mm. right? So it's definitely like a case-to-case basis, right?
Is arthritis, not saying primarily, but is a heavy driver of arthritis nutritional?
I can...
In the foot and ankle, I would say it's more overuse than anything else, but there are definitely are other... Mm. types of arthritis that can occur, right?
So
there is a genetic factor to it, but yeah, there's a lot of stress. I mean, you look at people that, I mean, the ground reaction force transmitted through the foot, even mm-hmm. with walking, not to mention jogging or running, mm-hmm. is substantial. And there's a 2/3 of the population are significantly overweight.
Mm.
And we're talking about incredible, you know, they've said, you know, just with, I think walking, it's like 3 times your body weight. Something he probably could correct me if I'm wrong, but just from those ground reaction forces for steps. So yeah, there's a lot of the foot and ankle get beat up a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
But I mean, he'll going back to that active toes, big toe is super important. Mm-hmm. Would you agree?
Yeah.
As driving that stuff. Well,
then you can't take it then. It's mine.
What are you talking about?
Carrie was talking about removing my big toe.
No, she wasn't. The toenail, you knucklehead.
Oh. I thought she was trying to. Okay.
Well, then we could transplant and give you a thumb toe. A thumb toe. There
you go. Okay, I thought you were saying something else.
Oh, okay. You could, Jonathan, please jump in and correct me. Typically, though, what I do to really the flexor, like flexor hallucis group, goes along the medial arch as well too, and it goes up into the leg, the muscle where it attaches. I'm doing a lot of what's eccentric loading of that, which is a negative loading to help strengthen that and make it more resilient at end range, by the way, to help it more resilient to those kind of stresses and give me a little more support on that.
Mm.
What do you think about something like that? Because I think people's foot musculature is significantly overlooked as far as training.
Mm-hmm. I would definitely, that's what I would recommend more than anything else. Just not just the big toe, but also the smaller toes as well, if you can.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. If one thing I've been seeing a lot recently, or not a lot, but that we've encountered at the gym too is toe fractures, right? And that happens a lot because, you know, your toes get caught on certain things. I mean, minus the small abrasions, minus the, you know, the spraining the capsule, but actual fractures. And I think it's important to rest during those times, right? Because even with avulsion fractures, fractures are, you know, straight breaks or kind of like explosions of the bone itself. But avulsion fractures are fractures of the bones where a tendon is attached. So it kind of avulses or pulls a piece of bone off.
Like where the tendon attaches to the bone, it'll pull that little.
He's looking at me right now.
It's rest is important.
I remember this. Yeah, that when
he said, because I asked him for advice, I knew I wasn't going to follow. And he goes, dude, he took me into the room, looked at the fluoroscopy, right? And we could see there's the fragment pulling out. Mm. He's like, okay, you really should be in a boot. You know?
I'm not going to do a boot.
And I was like, no.
I don't see that happening.
And then I was like, oh, I'm getting better. I have taped it up. I'd see him at the gym. I just had this little, he's like, oh, he's just shaking his head at me. I goes, no, it's better. He goes, no, give me your toe. He goes, look, it's still weak. Yeah. So it's actually better now. But it's just so funny.
We'll pull that foot out here and he'll test that.
Well, what I was going to laugh at is when he says rest, I think I'm super, both of my little toes have been broken. You've broken yours too, haven't you? Yeah.
At jiu-jitsu or just
in general? Yeah. Mm. And I had buddy taped that little sucker and I'm like, yep, here we go. Mm.
Don't have anyone just kind of pull on the toe, the traction. Because if the fracture it breaks and it's at angled, right? Don't have anyone pull it and try to put it, like, set it back into place.
Oh, when it's like crooked or something like that. Yeah.
Just buddy tape it. Because, I mean, certainly there's a time and a place to reset it, but right away at the gym, maybe we should use fluoroscopy, x-ray.
Yeah, you need to see that thing, whether it's aligned or not. You can't just keep pulling on that crap. Mm. I have both my little toes have an offset. They were both displaced fractures. Just jacked up looking. So don't do what I do. Definitely listen to Jonathan on that.
Yeah, good idea.
Six to 8 weeks for it to heal, or at least show up on the x-rays. The European literature shows, I mean, this is all from ankle fractures, but they try to early immobilization 4 weeks before they see signs of healing on x-ray. But we're a little bit more conservative here in the States. So we say 6 to 8 weeks. I've seen toes heal a little bit faster, but 6 to 8 weeks.
And it's just
ideally
being cautious of it. Well, if you're going to train, just be very cautious of it. And I know you're recommending to take some time off, but jiu-jitsu people are psychos.
I know.
They're psychos.
Well, I get it though.
Almost every gym stayed open during COVID when no one knew what COVID or Voldemort.
Dang.
Pause that.
You got to bleep that.
I'll bleep that. When no one knew what Voldemort was, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it was kind of freaky in the beginning.
Right.
For some. And jiu-jitsu people just put paper up on the windows and kept training.
You know what's actually funny? One of the funniest YouTube videos I've seen is that jiu-jitsu trap house. Did you guys see that one?
Maybe.
You've got to look at that one. It's hysterical.
Is that the one where, like, he would open the door?
And he'd open the door and go, "What you got? What you got?" And the guy had toilet paper because everyone was stealing toilet paper. He goes, "Man, I need some no-gi." He goes, "Yeah, we got no-gi." Yeah. He gave him, he goes, "Man, that's a little light." Yeah. And he gave him some more toilet paper. He goes, all right, you got 5 minutes. No coaching.
Yeah.
He goes back there and the guy's
one training partner.
The guy's slamming him. He goes, "Hey, how'd you set up that transition?" He goes, "Shut up, punk." It was so funny. That was kind of our... Yeah.
Jiu-jitsu people are psychos. So, yeah. I mean.
And even people that should know better, like myself. Because when people ask me something in the gym, I said, "Do you want Dr. Hardy or do you want Jiu-jitsu Chris?" Because they're going to get two different answers.
Right.
Yeah, it's so true.
Do you have any opinions about the nomenclature
of
jiu-jitsu and foot stuff? Some, I believe the Portuguese is bochinha.
It's,
I think that's like little foot or something like that. But
it's really confusing to me.
Okay.
Yeah. Because what is an ankle lock? Right. I mean, of course, I'm a 3-strap white belt. Right.
No, but you're a podiatrist. Right? So, I mean, let's talk about it.
You are a princess, and we will talk about it. So, an ankle lock yeah, is so, an Achilles lock, some people call it, straight ankle lock. Mm-hmm. This is kind of the normal terms, right? What's your beef with it?
Well, it's more of an Achilles lock, isn't it?
I think, and we talked about this briefly, mm-hmm. right? I would say traditionally an ankle lock is, yes, there's just a lot of pain. How people applied it was they just tried to like blow through your Achilles and get you to tap that way. I think there's been more refinement in the meta of ankle locks to actually explore breaking pressure, because so many people at the high levels would just eat ankle locks. Mm. Because they know it was more of a pain tolerance thing. Like for you to actually snap your Achilles from an ankle lock was pretty uncommon or just doesn't really happen.
So it was almost like strategy. Like I know they're not going to break anything. I just have to deal with the pain.
Yes.
I see.
And now you get the big boys like, what's that kind of Tex Johnson that like, will break a shin.
Or Paul Harris.
Paul Harris, you know, these guys that had good success. But then there was people like Dean Lister, Mikey Musumeci, that started getting into the meta of the actual foot and how to create legit breaking pressure while it visually looks the same, like what they're doing, the mm-hmm. finishing motion. But they're doing specific things to put the pressure on the foot where it would actually break the foot and not just create pain in the Achilles. Yeah.
Well, rotational type of pressure too.
A little bit, but it was more so, what's the, if this is your foot, what's that? When you put your foot like ballet toes?
Plantar flexion.
So a big goal when you, Dean Lister and Mikey Musumeci, at least their thing is to get the foot into that position in a full extension there, ballet toes or
plantar flexion.
Yep, plantar flexion. Mm-hmm. That once you're there, then you start arching or then you start putting on legit pressure and it's supposed to break at the top of the foot, which we kind of went over this a little bit so mm-hmm. you could kind of feel the difference of a traditional ankle lock, which hurts, doesn't feel good, but an actual breaking ankle lock feels totally different.
Wouldn't that be a foot lock then?
And that's your bugaboo, right?
Yeah.
Is why is it it's called
the,
an
it's the precision.
Lock? Yeah.
Of words.
Yeah. And I think there just wasn't as much detail to that position because it was also kind of, I think it was neglected coming up.
Well, people call the pelvis the hip too all the time.
Mm. Mm.
And it's not the hip. You know, they're like, oh, my hip hurts. Well, that's not your hip, you know, but. Again, that's medical mm-hmm. precision versus, mm-hmm. you know, common vernacular. And I think that's probably what the thing is.
Yeah.
So if we get a legion of foot and ankle specialists that are in jiu-jitsu, we're going to have a push for some
right.
standard nomenclature maybe.
I think it would make sense to separate them a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because an ankle lock is, if we're speaking in like precision terms, an ankle lock isn't super high percentage. Especially because you're, you know, that's what you see when people just want to get an advantage because you have a difficult, like you've got someone in a submission that they want to move out of, right? You get an advantage for that in tournaments. So people will just latch onto an ankle and start ripping on the thing, just, you know, okay. that sort of thing. But yeah, it's just a pain tolerance thing for the most part. And maybe you get a big guy that can blow through your shin, which,
like, wasn't the other one a toe hold?
Mm-hmm. Toe hold.
Yeah. Because, like, for example, wrist lock. I get it, right? It hurts
mm-hmm.
here.
Mm-hmm.
But toe hold, do you hold the toes?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But you're applying pressure at the lateral ankle.
Correct.
Yeah. So would that be more of an ankle lock?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Technically.
Yeah.
As far as anatomic.
Where is it dislocating when you complete a toe hold? Because I think it was Homolo Bahal had a, I don't know if it was, I think it happened to him where someone toe holded him and it was definitely dislocated.
The lateral ankle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Where's that?
The outside of the ankle.
I'm not as flexible as you are. So.
Where the foot actually connects, like where the ankle ball is.
Yeah.
It's right below that. Mm-hmm. That's where it's.
Yeah, because you have the tibia, fibula, and the talus, which make up the ankle. Mm-hmm. And it's this outside portion. There's three ligaments there. So that's why some people say, you generally hear two, three snaps, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. that's when you're in trouble. It's those three ligaments kind of popping. Mm. Then, I mean, you have other tendons and the ankle capsule itself holding the ankle in place. But when you tear through those, then it gets really lax, really loose.
Unstable. Those are like tearing in half?
Yeah. Like a rubber band and you just snap it.
Yep.
Yeah.
So those two, three pops, those are them literally snapping in half. It's like rolling.
It's like an inversion sprain, a real bad one. You know, when you roll your foot.
Okay,
it's
yeah.
It's the same type of deal. Those are those same ligaments.
Mm.
Ligaments, again, to review everyone, ligaments connect bone to bone, where tendons connect muscle to bone.
Okay. Is that a break or a dislocation?
You can have breaks associated with it, but pure soft tissue, just the ligaments, that's more of a dislocation. I mean...
So do you have to have surgery?
It's technically a sprain
yeah.
that can result in sprains are graded, right?
Uh-huh.
Depends on like a grade 3, you would consider a complete rupture mm-hmm. of the ligament. And because of that rupture, then the bone, the joint itself becomes lax. And that's what he's talking about, out of place.
So when that dislocation or sprain happens and it's...
Mm.
Do you need to get surgery then to replace?
Depends on the damage.
Mm.
Yeah.
But not guaranteed.
If you dislocate it, it's looking pretty good.
Three pops, are you going to have surgery to replace or to suture those things up?
So you can, but the peroneal tendons, the tendons on the outside of the ankle do generally a really good job of compensating for that.
Mm.
Yeah. I think there was a study done on army recruits, because they're pretty standard, their training schedule, their equipment, right? Mm. And after ankle inversion injuries, right, they had them go through physical therapy, and they found out that did much better than anything like an ankle brace. And there's a couple studies in Europe too, focusing on pro football players, pro volleyball players, bracing, taping work well, but physical therapy is the best.
Mm.
Yeah. And it's getting those
interesting.
Yeah. Peroneal tendons to.
So if you're feeling you're in a tournament and you feel those pops, when do you tap? First one, third one.
Oh man. Second one. Personal preference.
I mean, you can.
Yeah. Say. I would. I'm very quick to tap.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I would tap pretty quick because.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, being a hobbyist, I mean, we're going to tap
for much sure. Faster. I'm tapping right away.
We're all older, mm-hmm. so. But if they do start feeling those pops,
that's I wouldn't wait for the second. Yeah,
that you're right at the cusp of essentially.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think with the verbiage, it just comes from just when you do a toe hold, you're supposed. A lot of people grab over like the arch. But the foot is quite strong there.
Mm-hmm.
When they grab like this, you want to grab all the way at the toes. So you're like folding the toes over like so. And then you're almost like twisting it as well.
You know, when you do back control,
yeah.
You know, a lot of people get that under, grab the wrist there for that control. It's much better if you grab right across here for the same reasons. Because instead of grabbing at the wrist, you're covering the knuckles and you're able to control it a lot better. It's the same idea.
Okay.
Yeah, and then breaking same with the wrist lock, right? Once you break that initial structure, and once we get to like here, a wrist lock becomes way easier to finish. But if you ever catch someone that's like right here, and you're like, oh, that's not moving. Same with the foot. Gotcha. If we have a boot on, what we call putting a boot on, right? Which is just flexing it like that. Trying to toe hold, that's going to be darn near impossible, even if you have a giant strength advantage. But if you happen to catch them where they're a little bit loosey-goosey, and then you catch it there, it's hard for them to get back to that position.
Carrie's over there salivating.
Yeah. She's like, give me all your feet.
No, she wants those wrists.
She wants them all.
Yep.
yeah. Yeah, so then there's something called an Estima lock or Aoki lock, which is essentially a toehold motion, which Estima and Aoki, like, they're, you're applying them differently. But if you can imagine, I have a foot here and the toes are facing this way in Aoki lock. I'm going to put the blade at the Achilles. I'm going to clasp my hands and then I'm going to bring this elbow over the toes. And you can imagine this kind of breaking motion. And so it's similar to a toe hold.
Yeah, you'll see him hit that like in a reverse De La Riva defense. Someone's putting on like a, anytime someone puts a foot up near their.
On the hip.
On the hip, you just kind of bring it over to the belly and get that lock. And the Estima lock especially. Carrie loves that one too, so watch out.
I do like the being a little more precise though in the verbiage.
Yeah, no, we appreciate it.
Might be a little pretentious.
It's
that's what we're about here, though.
But you know, we were talking about that last time with the judo terminology. There's a good reason for having that because it you know exactly what people are talking about. You know, if we get more precision in the language associated with this stuff. I think that's why, you know, you look at the 10th planet system. They have names for things.
Intermediary positions.
Yeah. And they know exactly when they're instructing, they know exactly what they're talking about.
Yeah. Even if you just look at the most basic, like their rubber guard setups, they have positions like London, Mission Control,
Meat Hook,
yeah. Zombie. All these things are intermediary, like their positions that are all extremely related, so a meat hook is literally just grabbing around and hooking with your hand in a specific way. That's just a grip, like a cross collar grip, right? Like where you know exactly when I say get a cross collar grip. So if you say get a meat hook, you know exactly how you're going to grab at that armpit. A zombie, which is literally just a pommel. It's getting inside position. But because if you're like, pommel, like that could kind of get confused. My feet, pulling my legs, pulling my arms.
Yeah.
But if you're in the position where you would zombie, which is you're going to be in, let's say, London or Mission Control or even crackhead control, technically, you can zombie in that moment and you know you need to get that arm.
What do you think about this, Bill? I think getting some of that nomenclature a little more precise will also help some of the gray areas in competition.
100%.
Right, because then you're like, oh, can a white belt do this? Well, what is this?
I think it's extreme. I think that's, if anything, that, I mean, 10th Planet has, and Eddie Bravo have brought a lot of good things, I think, to the jiu-jitsu community and advanced a lot of things. I think the emphasis on naming stuff. And I know some people get butthurt because, you know, it's a wrestler's guillotine, it's a twister, like they will put their own quirky names to stuff that already has a quote-unquote name,
right,
which has probably been renamed already and people don't know it.
Right.
I think that's good. I mean, to have these things that, yeah, you can walk a less advanced person through something much easier, especially if that's part of your warm-ups and as you're teaching little positions, you're able to use these little terms. I think it's huge.
Yeah.
Because how often do we have to be like, okay, when you're putting your arm here, this hand, this one, like when you're saying zombie, you already, like, it already makes sense which arm you would zombie. Yeah. So it almost like it takes some guesswork out of it. There's a little bit more precision to the speech for sure.
Yeah. So good point. We'll start a movement. What else do you think we need to know foot and ankle wise for jiu-jitsu? Is there any other things you really think?
Oh man, proprioception. So the balance side of things. Yeah, proprioception. Another P word.
So again, we'll be the translators back and forth here. Proprioception is, if I close my eyes, how do I know my hand is out to the side versus over my head with my eyes closed? But I know that, right?
Yes.
The brain has, through a bunch of receptors and joints, it sends position signals to the brain. And it helps it coordinate movement. And what Jonathan's talking about with proprioception, that's what it is. It's like, you probably, Jonathan can tell you this, if you sprain an ankle, very, you know, right after you sprain it, you're very prone to kind of rolling it again.
Yeah.
It's because you've kind of smudged that position sense out in the brain, and you have to rebuild that pathway. When there's a joint injury, one of the most missed things in physical therapy is restoring proprioception or position sense. Go ahead.
No, and in a way, like prophylactically to prevent things like that, just if we could focus on balance exercises, and I feel like that's really important, especially in jiu-jitsu, because you like, I know where my hands are because I can see them most of the time.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know where my feet are.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I feel like that can potentially lead to a lot of fractures, sprains.
Well, and this is the whole purpose of the FRS. Mm-hmm. That whole functional range system that Andrew and I go through is really mapping the body very well in the brain in various positions, so you kind of know where things are and how to control in those positions. So that's why we were so fired up about that whole system.
Yeah.
One of the main things it does is proprioception. You see, even like when we were doing warm-ups, when Andrew has doing those hip cars, we were standing on one foot. We do a lot of that stuff. That's all from that system. So he's saying that, you know, really concentrating on that in training.
Yeah. So balance exercises are the best way to do that with for the ankle?
Foot. I think what we're doing at the gym is great, right? I would hope that the other gyms would try to implement and do the same thing, because I feel like we're doing a lot of injury prevention as well. And that's, for me, I think that's so, so important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a difficult balance from the instructor perspective, because yes, that's those kind of quote unquote warm-ups, which has injury prevention and even performance increases, right, with your own joints and stuff like that. It's fantastic. And helps us come back the next day for sure and train again. The difficult thing is, do you do that? Or if you have a more technical sequence of moves that you're going to be teaching, do you you have to use a whole hour? And you're not even going to get any sparring in that hour, because there's so many layers, and maybe shoveling the hips, something that's very foreign to newer people, white belts, blue belts don't even do it very well yet, you know? So you need to have that whole time, or you want to do some stand-up mix, and then that's your warm-up is doing some stand-up stuff, and then you go into like your actual jiu-jitsu moves on the ground. Or a strength training kind of stuff, you know, with your burpees and your 4 second down for, you know, this kind of stuff that can kind of add, I guess, complements the injury prevention in a way, or your basic line drills. Were you there on Saturday?
Yeah.
So just, you know, Andrew went really in depth on shrimping and there's multiple ways to shrimp, right? A lot of people don't even realize that. So, for example, a lot of people, when they rolled to their right hip, they were using their bottom foot to push off the mat, elevate their hips, push, right? That's a legit shrimp to do it that way. But that's not what we were doing in that moment. In that moment, it was, let's hone in kind of what Shanji calls the diamond position. Elbows suck. Are connected to our knees. We have good frames the whole time. We use the top leg to get the hips up, push away, and maintain framing, so then we can then keep the connection of the knee and the elbow and create a frame. And now we're regarding. That's a specific shrimp in itself, because there's other ways to do it with the top leg pushing that are different than that. Go ahead.
So is your point then, with all these things we're trying to cover,
we
have to kind of look at our time and say, where is this best spent in any given day?
It's really difficult on the instructor to try to figure out, okay, because then you have your most commonly 2-day-a-week people.
Yeah.
3-day-a-week people. This is the most common schedule for people to train, right? So how much are... how much, especially the newer person, that, I mean, when was the last time you did line drills?
Months.
Easily, mm-hmm. right? In the classes I teach, I don't do line drills at all.
I'm just letting you know, now Andrew's going to make us do line drills all the time.
I don't think so.
You don't think after listening to this, he's going to be like,
he'll make, we're Bill, doing he'll make line Bill and drills. I do no. line drills.
I'm sympathizing with it. That it's,
yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, it's a, because Andrew and I have also talked about, like, you know, we want to have more high reps, like stand up stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And like really making sure that's like a staple, you know, because we've been doing a lot of judo stuff and foot sweeps lately. And so where do you make that time to throw in line drills? Because what I was getting at is he went really in depth on the shrimp, but look at how many people were struggling, not just white belts, to do exactly the shrimp that he was doing. I mean, I was even struggling my first go down. I was like, I'm not keeping my elbow and knee connected, you know? So it's, I'm just saying it's a challenge to continue, or to figure out which direction to go.
I feel like you guys have been doing a really good job of keeping that balance, though.
I think you have to be cognizant of it. That's the big thing.
Yeah.
I think it's easy for instructors to just be like, okay, we're going to do our 10 burpees, well, our five squats.
And what, you know, when Andrew has me run warm-ups, you know, a couple times, you know, I'll always ask him, I'm like, hey, what are we doing today?
Sure.
Because I want to really target them to what we're doing. Mm-hmm. But a point that Jonathan's making, the feet are so overlooked. And, you know, if you're doing a lot of stand-up, it's really important to have that proprioception there. And, oh, by the way, guess what beats up knees more than anything? Bad foot and ankle function. He can tell you, I mean, you know, you watch someone go in that's like, that pronates, it has that medial arch collapse. Those knees are getting beat up.
Yeah. Heck, even the break fall, people are really struggling with just a forward roll with a proper break fall.
Yeah.
And people were slamming their knees on the ground. Like, yeah. Well,
but, you know, that's where you can do a targeted so-called warm-up. Mm-hmm. Whatever we're going to do. And that way we can kind of naturally flow through some things that are appropriate, right?
Yeah.
So, like, if we're doing a lot of stand-up, it'd be good to do some foot proprioception stuff and some balance stuff.
Yeah. At least you're able, I mean, I think one of the good, really good things about the CARS stuff and the injury prevention is we are equipping people to, like, this is stuff you do at home.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, like, do this after class.
Yeah.
At home. You know, you're eating dinner and just do a couple shoulder cars or something. That's like a real benefit there for sure.
Super cool.
We're running up on 2 hours.
Yeah, we are. A long time.
You got anything that you want to bring up that we have not?
We can save it for another podcast, but the weight loss.
Yeah.
That's a big one.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Let's save that one because I want to get into that.
It's a double. Both weight loss, maybe due to outside
stressors, situations.
Things that you're not trying to lose weight, but you are. And then the challenge of gaining weight when you want to. Some people, they are blessed and cursed with the ability to gain weight where they can't, or it's very difficult. So they eat as much cereal as possible.
I'm actually working with someone right now. Leave him alone. That was this.
This man right here.
Yeah, I'm working with someone right now trying to put on some muscle mass, and it can be difficult for some people.
Mm-hmm.
Jonathan, that's a great one. I definitely want to have you back on to kind of, we can talk about that.
And another episode we're considering is a episode on cold therapy, like going a little bit more in depth on the cold therapy / heat. So heat shock proteins and
I feel like that's been talked about a ton in a bunch of different podcasts, but maybe we can kind of hone it in to more grappling jiu-jitsu specific stuff.
And I think you guys have been experimenting for a while now.
Yeah, Carrie and I have.
Yeah. So you can really talk about that. I mean, we have talked a little bit about like how to get started and what to do, but maybe from like a that what the body's actually doing.
Sure.
And, you know, benefits from jiu-jitsu recovery.
Yeah, I mean, I can also give you some resources to other people on the internet that have done a really good job with that too.
Yeah.
Cool. I like it, man. Jonathan, thanks, man. Well,
thanks
for having me on. Thanks for coming by and putting up with us. You know, you have to put up with me at work, so you get a double dose on the weekend.
Yeah. Yeah. And I didn't like your answer on who was tougher to roll with.
So. You know, why would you ask him that? There's no win for
him. It's like, do you like mom or dad?
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And mom's pissed. So, I'll see you on Monday.
All right.
All right. We will email us questions if you got them. grapplingwithpodcast@gmail.com.
Yep.
Follow us on YouTube.
Like, and subscribe, please. Yeah,
give us a sub.
Yeah.
Help the algo. Comment. Call Chris old, fat, and dumb.
That's nice.
That's a bit, it helps the algorithm. A bit on the nose.
It is a little bit. Helps the algorithm, though.
Okay.
Blow us up, Liv. Oh.